And it is time for yet another Movie Mastery. It's the podcast where we watch the movies that you recommend. We don't know what we're watching until we go to see it. And I am John. Over there is Jeff. You know the deal. It's us.
It's me and John.
And we're here. That's what's happening.
We sure are. We're not somewhere else.
We are definitely right here. We're in the studio. In this professional recording studio that we have.
That is not just Jeff's dingy bedroom.
So
one of our recent guests mistook for a laundry room.
So this week, we have a special treat because it was a movie that was actually sent to us, the physical copy of the movie.
Yeah, a real DVD, and those get two spaces on the wall of the big movie list.
Yep, so that was Jacob S., who sent in Blood Punch.
Yes, Blood Punch, which I understand is mostly alcohol, just a little tiny bit of blood on the top.
It's mostly sangria.
Yeah, it's basically sangria, but with blood instead of wine. Yeah. So it's just blood with fruit in it.
Yeah, it's what you'd find at, like, one of those vampire mixers.
Have you ever tried? Oh, yes, one of those vampire mixers.
You know.
Served in one of those blood bags.
You go to those vampire mixers, and everyone's kind of like, I don't really know about this. And then you gotta do one of those, like, what human are you bringing to the picnic?
And then you've got to have that piece of paper taped to the back of your head that's got the name of a famous vampire, and other people have to try and hint you into guessing who you are.
Oh, yeah. And there's always someone there who has to tell you that, oh, I'm sorry, I can't drink that. I only have type O. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. Also, I do CrossFit.
Is that paleo blood? It's been increasingly hard to find since the Cro-Magnon died out.
I only feed from vegans.
I don't know what we're doing right now.
Blood punch.
Blood punch, right. Have you ever actually had traditional old school alcohol punch?
What, like in a punch bowl punch?
Yeah, but I mean like really the way that they had it on like pirate ships and whatnot.
Oh, no. I have not had a pirate punch.
Because it is horrible. It's just like, all right, add one pint of strong black tea. Okay, now get every kind of alcohol you have and put that in there.
Put everything into a bucket.
Chop up two lemons and one orange and put that in there. You are done.
Congratulations. Welcome to the party.
You are going to fall asleep.
So, Blood Punch is unfortunately not about a drink.
No, it really isn't. Instead, it's about...
It's basically a murder Groundhog Day.
Yeah, it's murder Groundhog Day. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah, so, you know, it's month appropriate.
Now, other people are going to wisely point out that that Tom Cruise movie that should...
Oh, yeah. I can't even... All I want to call it Die Another Day, that's a James Bond thing.
Well, they were originally going to call it by the title of the book it's based on, which was Live, Die, Repeat.
Yeah.
And that's all I have in my head.
Oh, Edge of Tomorrow.
Edge of Tomorrow. There you go. So Edge of Tomorrow is also Murder Groundhog Day.
Yes.
But this is low-budget, boring Murder Groundhog Day?
Yeah, this is, instead of being action thriller Murder Groundhog Day, it's supposed to be, like,
makes
comedy horror.
Think. Yeah.
So, the...
Get ready to hate the lead character in Blood Punch.
Nah, man.
Oh, not him.
This is the guy from Deathgasm.
Oh, no, I mean, the Deathgasm guy is perfectly fine. I mean, his wife at the time of filming.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, if you had read my reviews this year for Halloween, then you saw that I reviewed a film called Deathgasm.
Yeah, Deathgasm, or as they call it in New Zealand...
Deathgasm.
Deathgasm, which is an amazing movie.
It's fucking amazing. I love New Zealand horror so much.
Yeah.
And the main guy from that movie is our main guy in this, doing his damnedest at an American accent.
Well, and so is his, I forget her name. She was in Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers, as a character named Frida. And the best I can figure is I think that's the woman who puts her two kids on a horse at the very start of Two Towers.
Maybe. I don't know.
I don't remember for sure.
God knows I don't care enough to go watch that movie and see.
No. And Lord knows it's real hard to Google for what lady was that in Lord of the Rings Two Towers.
Yeah.
So anyway, she's in this as the lead female role. And she was actually Deathgasm guy's wife.
Yeah.
At the time. They have since split up, apparently. But anyway... So it stars the two of them.
And it is just weird, wacky hijinks the whole way through.
Yeah, it's got a lot of moments that are supposed to be cool.
The main issue I have with it is this movie is going to spend a lot of time on nothing.
Yeah.
It has, the problem I have with this movie is it has an amazing premise of the whole murder Groundhog Day thing. I love that premise.
Yeah, it's a great concept.
And then just wastes it on nothing. You're like, man, if this had been like a 45-minute movie, maybe,
mm-hmm.
this would have been way better because you could have had way less wheel spinning.
If it had been like a short film or an episode of Outer Limits or something.
Yeah, that would have been great. But
yeah.
They made a whole movie out of it, and that's why you get like just scenes of them sitting around doing nothing, just having stupid conversations.
Yeah. So you want to get back to this after the break?
Yeah, we will be right back after some music with the full review of Blued Punch.
Oh man, Blued Punch? That's,
yeah.
That's about, yeah.
I got blued.
Dabba dee, dabba die. I'm blued, dabba dee, dabba die.
Now, Blood Punch. The actual Blood Punch.
The actual Blood Punch. The For Reals historical Blood Punch.
The literal Blood Punch.
And it takes about forever before it gets to anything that's about blood or punching.
Yeah. This, okay. This movie starts with like a guy waking up and he finds a thing that's narrating to him what's going on.
Yeah.
So technically, almost this entire film until the very end is a flashback narration being told to the main character currently.
Yeah, so effectively what's happening to the main character is he's going through Groundhog's Day life, and he also has set up the 51st dates device, where he has a video that tells him what's happening. So
yeah.
That's what we're seeing here.
So he wakes up and he's like, oh, what's going on? I don't understand. And he's like, well, here's a video of me telling me about things.
Good thing I went near the bathtub where this video was hiding right away. That's one thing that I thought was fairly clever, because he gets up and immediately rushes to vomit in a toilet, and then he realizes there's wires dangling out of the bathtub. And I was like, oh, that's clever. He knows where he goes to vomit every morning, so he left the note for himself in a place where he'd find it. And then every time after that they show him wake up, he just barfs anywhere else.
Well, the thing is, the time when he goes to throw up in the toilet, he doesn't remember what's going on. But all the other times where he just throws up wherever, he does.
Oh, so the difference is that he doesn't give a shit because he doesn't have to clean it up later.
Well, yeah, because for all the, when he first doesn't realize what's going on, he went and threw up in the toilet. But for most of the other ones, when he wakes up and realizes he's groundhogged,
yeah.
He's like, oh, I'm just going to throw up wherever because I don't care.
So this movie opens with the sort of thing that drives me nuts, which is he's watching this video of himself on a really weird machine. It's sort of fun. Because at the beginning, I was like, what the hell is he watching this on? That is a weird iPad. It's like too thick, and there's wires dangling out of the back of it and stuff.
Yeah, it looks like a very tiny TV.
And they actually explained that, and I was fairly pleased that they did. But he's watching a video of himself, having repeated a day from yesterday. And him on the screen is like, hey, buddy, I need to tell you some stuff. You're going to think that it's all about science fiction. Or you're going to think that it's all about you. But really, it all started because of love. And you're like, dude, get to the fucking point.
Yeah.
You're talking to yourself in the future.
Also, this is an urgent message that he's giving himself, that he's like, look, dude, you're not going to remember this. You need to remember that this is happening.
Yeah.
So that you know whatever. But instead he's like, oh, it all started because of a girl. And you're like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Shut the fuck up.
And he even emphasizes it by chopping some of his own fingers off, because he's like, who gives a shit? I'll wake up tomorrow. I don't need fingers. So he's like, look at this. I'm going to chop my own fingers off. Did that get your attention? Or is this real enough for you now? Great. Okay, here we go. The funny thing about love.
Yeah, I'm like, dude, I know that you have been living through what is probably about 5 years worth of groundhogging days.
Almost exactly 5 years when you run the calculations, yeah.
But at that point, I don't care. I've been alive for like 30 some odd years, and if I chop my fingers off, I'm not going to be able to sit there and go, you know, the funny thing about life is, it comes at you fast.
That's the thing that gets me is like, I'm never going to find myself in a science fiction movie situation, right? But I'm already fully set with a message I would deliver to myself tomorrow if I knew I was going to lose my memory. I am 100% ready for that eventuality, and I'm already like, all right, guy, here's the fucking deal. I'm going to tell you exactly what's happening, why, how, and what the plan is. There will be no digressions, and there will be no slow stories about romance. I'm already ready. Like, it's just like how everyone now has a fucking zombie survival plan.
Oh, yeah. It's when you watch a zombie movie and the people are like, oh, zombies, what is this? What's going on?
We're going to call them walkers. I'm going to try and talk my husband into not eating me. and you just get infuriated because you're like, I have a zombie survival plan. If my husband wakes up and he's a zombie, I will cut his head off.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I'm like, man, if you went out of your way to establish that you lived in a world where zombies were never a thing, like that was just a pop culture thing that never happened in your universe, sure. But otherwise, I'm like, oh, is this set in our world? Then no.
They're always set in a world where no zombie movie has ever happened before, because they're always like, what do we call them? Oh, we call them walkers. The chompers in the dark.
That's what I call grandma.
We call them man-meat wanters.
Also what I call grandma. Hey.
But I'm just saying, similar to that fact, I have a full time loop plan, a contingency system stuck in my head already. I'm all set for time loop survival. I'm also ready for if aliens invade, I'm good to go. But this guy's like, no, I got some time to waste. I'll chop my fingers off, and then I'll spin you a yarn.
And the yarn begins with memories he already has, because it goes way back to before the time loop even happened.
Yeah.
Which means it's just shit he already knows.
So remember when you were in rehab for having a meth lab?
Yeah, remember when you were doing a meth lab in college, which seems unlikely because it was at the dorms?
Yeah, he was cooking meth in a dorm, which I've been around cooked meth because I worked at a Trader Joe's for a while, and people would in the beach neighborhood in San Diego, and people would go to ingest meth in our bathroom. And when you walk in, it smells like a chemistry teacher came in there. Disgusting ozone smell.
No, there's no way you would be able to have a meth lab for more than like a couple of hours before people were immediately complained to the RA and found it.
Yeah, the functionality of meth in this movie is downplayed, basically.
The weird thing is that it spends so much time wanting to build up meth and then doesn't care about it.
Yeah, because there's all this stuff where, like, so he's in rehab and he's trying to get better and he's studying. He's basically convinced that his life is over because he's already in rehab for meth, which means that no one's ever going to give him a job. He definitely can't go back to school.
Yeah.
So he's in some group meeting when a woman, I forget what her name is now. I forget every character in this movie's name.
Yeah, that's fine.
Except for Russell.
Oh, really? You remember Russell?
Yeah. I think Milo is the actual character, the actor's name, and not his character. But I'm going to call him Milo anyway.
Oh.
I'm going to call them Milo and Olivia because those are the names of the actors, and that'll work for me. So Milo's in this group meeting, and Olivia is there, and Olivia is, like a 90s pastiche of my so-called life smugness?
Oh my god, I know that he needs to fall in love with this girl for this movie to take place,
mm-hmm.
but she is insufferable, and there's no possible way anyone would give two shits about this lady.
Yeah, because she's sitting in the circle where they're all talking about their problems, which, by the way, the circle's not guided or led by an official in any way.
No, there's just some people sitting on chairs talking to each other about meth.
And so her thing of, like, what I want is some crystal meth, because when I have crystal meth, I have superpowers, and I'm crazy smart, and I can fuck like my ass is on fire for 36 hours straight. Which, okay, let's get to it. First of all, no, you fucking can't.
One, no.
Crystal meth just makes you sit there, you dumbass. Two, no one wants to fuck for 36 hours straight. That is not a thing.
No, man. That would be the worst.
I hate that shit in movies whenever they're like, oh, I could fuck for days. And you're like, dude, no, everyone wants to fuck for about a half hour. That is the maximum before there's some unpleasant rubbing.
Well, that's the point where you get, where you're like, man, I could be doing something else right now.
Yeah, the only people who want to fuck for more than a couple of hours is because they need to get all the shots in so that they can make the movie. And they're using a crap load of lube.
But she's like, who can cook for me? Who's who's going to make me meth? And I'm just sitting there going, you're in a rehab place.
Yeah.
And like, even if this little circle isn't guided, which it should be, there's like people that work there in the background. You know, they're in like the full white getup.
It's the worst because there's some girl in the group, some other woman, who's like, what you're saying is actually really disruptive and you're in a rehab center and please stop talking about how you want to help us make money through meth. And Olivia just responds by insulting her.
Yeah.
She's like, you skinny, useless trash. I'm trying to cook meth here and you're wasting my fucking time. Blah, blah, blah. And that pisses off the other woman who, because she is pissed off, is immediately carted off by security. And, you know, the security who was sitting there the whole time and wasn't like, hey, please stop trying to sell meth cooking as a job to these rehab people in this rehab facility. They leave her alone, presumably because, as we establish later in the movie, she's a impeccably perfect ninja. Who never misses, can do things like throw guns to herself, kill people with thrown cleavers from 50 yards away without looking.
Yeah, the kills in this are just like, huh, okay.
Huh. Everyone in this is some sort of crazy old boy style super murderer. What do you know?
What do you know?
Yeah.
The fact that this happens and then nobody carts her away, and like, I don't, like, she has fucking pseudo in her,
oh, yeah,
like,
has
a ring or something.
Yeah, she opens up one of those stupid poison rings and pours out pseudo pills, and she's like, this is pseudo. It's one of the primary ingredients of making meth. Listen up, meth heads who know this.
Yeah, and I'm like, okay, if you get brought into a rehab place, and they're like, yeah, you can just wear whatever you got. We're not going to check anything that's on you or
yeah.
do anything like that, because the idea that someone would come into a drug rehab place to attempt to sell drugs has never crossed our mind.
Oh, no, we're setting this in Cookieville minimum security rehabilitation.
Oh, Cookieville.
That's where this is. I mean, also, I just want to put this out there. You know how we were talking earlier about how zombie movies only work in situations where no one's ever heard of zombies before?
Yeah.
Olivia only works in a world where no one invented the phrase, shut up. Because she just consistently gives these too cool for school speeches that last way too long. Listen up, everybody. You dumb fucks are going to help me find... Shut up.
No, shut up.
Just shut up. You're being very disruptive right now. Please just shut up.
So one of the guys there, not our main character, is like, oh, I did some cooking before. I'll help you out. And then turns out he fucked up.
He's bad at cooking because he doesn't know about a secret time release.
Yeah. Oh, this is the time release pseudonephrine, and you've got to get the things in there and do some stuff. Great. Sure. I'm glad that our main character is a super Breaking Bad wizard.
Yeah.
But even then, he's like, okay, look, I cooked it for you. Here you go. Great. We're done here. And then she's like, no, I'm going to have sex with you. And now you've got to cook like 100 pounds or whatever of crystal meth for me in one day. And he doesn't just go, ha, no.
Well, the whole premise of what happens at this point is like, he's like, look, I made this good meth. And she's like, wow, good job. I'm going to snort it and then fuck you. And he's like,
all right.
Okay. And then when they get up, basically, she's like, hey, so here's the deal. We're going to break out of here, and then tomorrow you're going to cook 100 pounds of pseudo. And he's like, yeah, how are we going to break out of here? And all I'm thinking is, I don't know, I guess you could just leave.
Yeah.
I mean, it sure looks like there are no guards or anything.
Given that you set up a meth lab in a closet somewhere and no one seemed to give a fuck.
And the way you set up a meth lab is that a bloody guy and this girl just came to your room in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
And we're like, hey, come help us cook meth. And you were like, yeah, okay, I'll just walk out of my room. It seems like there's not a whole lot of security, so...
Not a lot going on here.
I guess just leave. But no, her plan is that her insane boyfriend is going to kill everyone between them and freedom.
Yeah.
And she's like, at this point, I'm going to give you... Because she can't just say anything. So she has to give this diatribe. Like, at this point, I'm going to give you the option of leaving. If you choose to leave, I would respect you for it. This is not a good idea, what I am recommending. My boyfriend, who is not just evil, but is literally the devil, is coming. By the way, he is my boyfriend. Also, you just fucked me. He is my boyfriend, though, and you have to be careful. I have to make sure he doesn't kill you, because he is the devil. My boyfriend is the devil.
The whole thing is just ridiculous, and it's one of those scenarios where the main character's like, yeah, but I went along with it, even though I knew I shouldn't, because I was kind of into this girl. And I go, man, you just got laid. and that's it. Like, you don't know her. She's basically annoying and has no personality. She's about as, like, bland speaking as possible, but just smug about it.
Yeah, here's her entire personality trait, the entire one that she has. She's smug, and she lights cigarettes by using strike-anywhere matches that she strikes with her thumb. And I sure hope you like watching that happen, because it will happen in this movie 7,000 times.
And then, I mean, you know, it's just not even, like, crazy attractive. It's just sort of like, oh, like, kind of a dumpy, average-looking girl who's annoying showed up, and boy howdy, I'm in love.
I mean, she's certainly fairly good. I mean, she's not amazing, but she's fairly good-looking. She looks all right. She looks perfect as the person for this kind of skinny, strung-out-looking dude to fall in love with. It's fine. I'm okay with that. It's that she's horrible.
Oh, like, she's a horrible human being.
Like, at no point is she nice to him.
No.
So then he's like, I definitely am in love with you, mean lady.
And I definitely need to go with your crazy killer boyfriend and cook meth for you in one day.
So anyway, her boyfriend shows up, and he is an evil police officer who I swear to God is one of, second Becky's boyfriends from Scrubs.
It's entirely possible.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Sarah Chalk. You know, second Becky.
The lesser Becky.
Yeah, well, yeah, lesser Becky. So second Becky's boyfriends from Scrubs, I'm like 100% sure he's one of them. Anyway, he looks like that, too. He's generically blonde.
He's just a buff, blonde, like, smirking.
He looks like a background frat guy from a college comedy made by, like, National Lampoon.
Yeah, he is definitely a Van Wilder extra.
A Van Wilder villain, basically. The sort of guy who's going to end up eating dog cum at the end of the movie.
That kind of guy.
Yeah, that's what this character. And he is just a giggly, smirky asshole who has a whole bunch of deeply pseudo-philosophical opinions about guns.
Yeah.
So the three of them drive off into the night in a police car, and then they get to a house.
Out in the woods
somewhere. Out in the woods. A cabin in the woods, and horrible music starts playing. They start doing crystal meth. And we start setting up some of the premises of the film. Russell's a real asshole, and he's very unhinged and dangerous. You can tell because Olivia responds to Russell by just repeating whatever he just said.
Yes.
Because he's so dangerous that you don't say anything other than what he wants to hear.
Yeah.
We establish that he has been her boyfriend since she was 12.
Yep.
And that she's always been a strung-out crack addict type, which she does not look like that.
Nope, she does not look like she has been doing drugs since she was 12, but whatever.
No, she sure has all her teeth.
Certainly does.
She has better teeth than me, and I haven't done crystal meth. So, anyway, that we've
established. I have done crystal Pepsi, though, so.
Well, that shit will fuck your teeth right out.
Right up.
It'll fuck your teeth raw for 36 hours. Like your teeth were on fire. And that Milo doesn't trust Russell, and Russell doesn't trust Milo, and that Russell has an opinion that bullets only tell the truth.
Yeah, his guns can lie, but bullets tell the truth.
Which is why he apparently always turns anytime he loads a gun into a game of Russian roulette. So I guess he only uses revolvers.
Yeah, it's weird because he basically only has your standard guns with clips and whatnot. But then as soon as he starts talking about, you know, bullets being the thing that tell the truth, now he has a revolver.
Yes, he has a big old silver revolver, and he's like, yeah, that's why I always leave one bullet out, and he throws it to a place where it'll be important later.
Yeah. I really wanted him to be like, that's why I always leave one bullet out, and it still just be like a clip that he puts in. Like, oh, that doesn't really...
That just means you're going to have one less shot. It doesn't...
I don't think he realized that, oh, well, whatever.
That's why I always replace one bullet in my clip with a stick of Bazooka Joe gum.
Every time.
And if it's a bigger gun, like a 357 or something, one of my bullets is just a tube of chapstick. Burt's Bees. Because Burt's Bees chapstick always tells the truth. Anyway, that's his dumb theory. That I guess every once in a while, if you try to shoot a guy but don't because there's no bullet there, that's the truth.
I guess. It's so weird. I don't understand why that was even in there.
So that happened. Oh, and also we have to have a scene where he lets Milo know that Milo and Olivia had sex.
He's like, I know you fucked her.
I know you fuck. Don't you lie to me. You fuck my wife.
You fuck my wife?
You fuck my wife.
You fuck my wife.
But, and it leads to him doing crazy, stupid, violent stuff where he tries to make Milo shoot an apple off Olivia's head with a crossbow, which he doesn't want to do. And the only way to get out of it is for Olivia to do some faux badass thing.
He, like, shoots the vase near them and is like, if you done sucking each other's dicks.
Yeah. Actually, she shoots a cigarette out of Milo's mouth.
Does she?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like I was saying before, she's an impeccable, perfect ninja, and it makes no sense that she's been with her evil, hated boyfriend for as long as she has been.
Yeah.
Because at any time, she could have killed him with anything in the room. The fact that she is so relentlessly passive throughout the entirety of this film is infuriating, because she is unrealistically competent for a strung-out drug addict who is, like, 20.
Oh, yeah. Like, every time anyone talks to her, and we get the person they're going to sell the meth to, we eventually find, and like he also is like, oh yeah, she's always been like a little drug addict forever, and she's like basically just will do anything for drugs, and you're like, really? Because somewhere along the way she seems to have been trained by Batman.
Yeah, at some point she turned into a crazy ninja and decided, I'm gonna use these powers for passivity and smugness.
Yeah. Great.
So anyway, we get to the next morning, and that is
the morning that...
Oh, wait, we forgot the part where they have their...
They have a bunch of peyote.
They have a bunch of peyote, and they have a drug seance in the woods.
Yep. But that's why he wakes up in the morning and vomits, is because he had way too much drugginess.
Yes.
But that is sort of the same setup as when we first came in, so you can kind of tell this is going to be the day that repeats.
Yes.
But he goes to cook, and then Russell comes in, and he's like, oh, well, now I'm going to kill you. And he's like, oh, but you can't. I still need to refine this meth, and nobody knows how to do that but me. And then Russell goes through the full steps of everything you'd have to do. And he's like, how do you know that?
Yeah. So we already have our first establishing bit that there is something amiss. And it ends with basically them successfully killing Russell after a lot of work. Oh, by the way, we have to watch at least one more little moment of psychosexual Russell drama, where while Milo is cooking the meth, Russell's outside using an axe to chop wood in half while Olivia has to hold it in place.
Yeah, so she's got to hold either side of the log while he chops it in half.
And the whole scene's unspoken. He just keeps pointing at her with the axe, and she keeps holding up these blocks of wood.
Smaller and smaller halves of wood.
Yeah, and the whole time she's just being completely passive about it. But, again, she could stop this at any time. She is an insane ninja.
Yeah, she could just pick up, like, one of those parts of a log and shove it through his face.
Yeah, just at any time. She could just flick one at him and he'd die. That's what we've established. Anyway, she shows up behind Milo during the big confrontation where Russell's going to kill him and says that she's switched sides. Milo throws acid at Russell.
Yeah.
And then they all run outside. Russell gets killed. And
yeah, he eventually dies and they bury him.
Oh, and he wakes up again while he's being buried.
Yeah.
And he's laughing as he's getting buried alive.
Yeah.
It was fun. So that all happens.
Yeah. It's real fucked up and crazy. And then they fucking fall asleep and wake up the next morning and he throws up. And oh boy, it's the same morning again.
It's the same day. And this time they immediately kill Russell.
And Milo's just like, holy fuck, what's going on? What's happening? Oh, Jesus.
And of course, this leads to Olivia being ultra smug about it. Like, well, it's a problem, Milo, and problems have solutions.
Yeah. So they're like, oh, well, we've got to figure out what to do. And now they're just, like, murdering Russell over and over again.
And this is when we start getting into the questioning how this time loop works scenario. Because a lot of materials get left behind each time there's a time loop, but not all of them.
So,
for example, there's a pile of Russells.
Yeah. When they kill him the second time, and he goes and digs up basically where Russell, he buried him the first time, because he's like, holy shit, Russell's alive. Did I just dream yesterday entirely? Then he finds Russell's dead body buried where he put him before they kill him again. So he's like, all right, something crazy is happening here. So when they kill him again, they have another dead body. So they end up just getting like a pit of Russells.
Yeah, they have a big pile of Russells. Here's some other things they can do. They can write notes that stay there from one day to the next.
Yeah, they start trying to, like, they do that weird conspiracy thing where you have, like, a bunch of notes on a wall and, like, strings tied to it.
Oh, yeah, that's the mark of either a person with an obsession or a genius with an obsession in a movie, and you can tell the difference. A regular person with an obsession has newspaper clippings with strings and pushpins. A genius just writes on all the walls and the windows. That's a genius. You can see that in things like A Simple Mind, where you can tell he's a genius because he writes on all the walls. If you write on one wall, you're a kid. If it's two walls, you're crazy. If it's all the walls, you're a genius.
But if it's the floor, you're back to crazy.
Yeah, floor puts you back to crazy.
Because then you just got spirals on the floor that you're making.
Yeah, and if it's the floor and the ceiling, then you're Jack Torrance. I don't even like that movie, but bam, reference.
References.
So yeah, we've established that the two of them are desperately trying to solve the puzzle of why they're repeating the same day over and over again. There is some dumb Native American mystic bullshit about how somebody...
Oh, if you spill blood on this ground during the full moon, then you get to Groundhog Day.
Groundhog. It's happened to other people. There were other groups that done happen this too, like some cannibals and some rum runners. It's happened to other people.
Yeah, but the big thing is, I really don't know what does and doesn't get reset and what they determine that by. Because
the rules are nebulous. You end up with a pile of dead Russells. The weapons that they use are used up. Like, they have a limited supply of grenades, for example.
No.
They say they do. At one point they're mentioning we have this many grenades left or something like that. They also get unlimited food because the food does reset each morning.
Yeah, where they put things the other night seems to get reset as well, because the weapons that they would use, there's a big wall of weapons in this cabin.
Yes.
And when they take weapons off of there and use them, they're just there the next day.
Yeah.
So weapons get reset, food gets reset, bodies don't get reset, apparently the notes that they take don't get reset.
Yeah, and the camera that he tears out of the police car later does not get reset.
No.
So there's rules, there's weird rules about what does and does not get reset throughout the course of the also any wounds they suffer are irrevocably healed.
Yeah, they are reset.
Yeah, they are completely reset and start in the same place but with their memories. And the rule is eventually established that if you die during the day, then you lose all your memories, but if you just go to bed at night, then you get to keep them.
Yeah, it's weird because I don't know that what the fuck is going on with that, because you'd think that eventually, like...
Well, we established at one point in the movie, they show the number of hours that the police car has been turned on, and when you run the numbers in your head, it comes out to just slightly more than 5 years that the police car has been turned on, which means that they've killed, what, like 1,600 Russells?
But that also means that the camera itself doesn't get reset because it's recording through the time loop. So it's not like it goes back and is like, oh, I've only been recording today.
Oh, yeah. It just says I've been logged on for 44,000 hours or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And the established is, yeah, they've killed about 1,830 Russells, but they don't have room to bury like 1,830 Russells.
No, I mean, there is one scene where they burn them, but I'm like, you're still going to have like a pile of bones there. You don't have a crematorium.
Yeah, luckily the gas resets, I guess.
I guess the gas resets, yeah. And they try a whole bunch of stuff. So they're like, okay, we tried not going to sleep. We tried driving out of range of whatever we're in.
They tried keeping Russell alive for the night, which is an interesting one because Russell still resets the next morning instead of dying.
Yeah, they were like, oh, let's see what happens if nobody dies.
Oh, and that's the thing that they're doing, by the way, is they have to kill Russell every morning.
Yeah.
Because the two of them have decided that they need to kill Russell every morning until they can figure this out, because he's really, really dangerous.
Yeah, he's super dangerous, and they're totally into each other.
And they are very badass, because every time they kill Russell, it's just
some new way to do it, instead of just the same way every time.
But it's all casual. It's always like, Russell's coming, bam, got him. Or shooting up through the floorboards of the building, and somehow that perfectly kills Russell. Or the scene I was mentioning earlier where Olivia uses throwing a cleaver at Russell to make a dramatic point, and Russell is 50 feet away and behind her.
Oh, yeah. They're just sitting there at a table, like, trying to hash out some plan of how to get out of this time loop. And Russell comes and he's like, what the hell? And she just, without looking, throws a cleaver and chops his neck. And you're like, all right, so you're just crazy.
Yeah, you are an insane ninja. I really wanted that scene to fall flat on its face. You know, like, she just throws the cleaver behind her and it falls, like, 10 feet behind her on the ground. And he's like, what the fuck is that? Are you offering me a cleaver?
What is happening here?
What are we doing?
But the weird thing is that apparently the day after they didn't kill him, he doesn't just wake up the next day and be like, oh shit, I know that there's a time loop.
Yeah, no, instead he resets again, even though he was... So, there's a couple points where the movie basically cheats, and there's a few things that are left nebulous about the time loop science.
Yes.
The things that reset and the things that don't are fairly nebulous, and there are scenes where people should lose their memory and don't.
Yeah.
Or shouldn't and do.
Their big plan that they come up with is, oh, well, it's part of this Indian tribe, and if we can get off of their land, whatever their land was beforehand, then maybe we can get out of the loop, but we'd need to, like, fly to get out.
So they kill Russell, they cook the meth, and then they go to where they... Because there's a secret airport with a secret drug dealer at it.
Yeah, with just the worst weird drug dealer.
Yeah, in a good movie, he'd be a character played by that guy who was killing Steve Buscemi in The Wood Chipper. you know that, what's his name? Peter Stormare. He's a Peter Stormare type. But, of course, he's not. He's a worse person.
No.
But anyway, I mean, don't feel bad, guy who was in that role. Lots of people are worse people than Peter Stormare.
It is true. We are worse than Peter Stormare.
Yeah, so there's a Peter Stormare type. He's wearing a shitty yellow tracksuit.
Yeah.
He looks like a hot dog package.
And he's got just some warehouse that he's turned into like a drug disco.
Yeah, because drug people always do that. They always immediately install a couple of babes and one of them lights, and they're just like, yeah, party with the rave music.
Yeah, the first thing I did when I got this weird airport in the middle of nowhere is put some leather couches, got some girls, and a disco ball. Okay.
Yeah. So they go to find him and basically try and sell him the meth and then barter for a flight out in his airplane.
Yeah, they're like, look, we'll take way less than we had originally bargained for, but we want to be able to fly out. And then, oh my goodness, he betrays them.
And of course, he has to be a total weirdo.
Yeah.
He's all like, yeah, I know Skyler from... Skyler.
Hey.
Skyler.
Oh, I should have known it was Skyler because it's Breaking Bad.
Yeah. God, it just came back to me now. It's just perfect. Good. Well, so Skyler, that's Olivia. I genuinely do not remember
Martin?
What... Martin? That
Something with an M.
Maybe something with an... Yeah, okay. Someone with an M. I'm keep calling him Milo, though.
That's fine.
Yeah, but Skyler. We have Skyler. We are
now on board.
We're go for Skyler.
we are go for Skyler.
So yeah, he betrays them, has his shotgun ninja named Nabiki.
Oh, Nabiki.
Try and murder them. They shoot out the... Again, because the two of them are perfect with guns, both Milo and Skyler. They like shoot out the lights and shit.
Milton. His name is Milton.
Okay, Milton. Thank you.
There you go.
So Milton and Skyler shoot out the lights and escape, but they have been shot.
Yeah.
And so they try to drive back and stay alive until midnight, so at least they don't lose all their work they've done so far.
Yeah, and of course they reset the next day.
They reset the next day because they didn't go anywhere, but at least they still have their memory so they can try again.
Yes.
At this point, they forget to kill Russell. And so there's a day where Russell captures them, and there's a whole bunch of fucking cat and mouse shenanigans.
Yeah.
And eventually, and God, we should just get around to this. Eventually, they realize that the rule is only one person can get out of the time loop.
And this was basically, you'd know this from the beginning, because when they're having their little peyote bullshit thing, Russell tells this story of like, oh yeah, there was a great battle here, and they fought for months, and the rivers were choked with the bodies of the dead, and it's said that only one man left alive. And you're like, oh, okay, I get it. There can only be one person left alive, because the whole premise is if you spill blood during the full moon, then you get into the loop. But if you do that, then only one person can be alive. Although they don't give the radius for that.
Yeah, for example, they don't mention if evil drug dealer...
Archer?
Archer or Nabiki or any of the people that are just hanging out in his warehouse count as being in the part of this circle.
Because they're still on the land, technically.
Yeah, because they're within the radius that you can drive to, and they have interacted with our main characters at least once and tried to kill them. I feel like they should probably be brought into the loop, but they're not.
Yeah. I mean, you'd think maybe.
Yeah. So, basically, Milton tells Skyler this, and he's like, hey, only one of us can get out. And, of course, he's been killing Russell once a day for 5 years now. Oh God, we completely forgot the part where it's revealed that for a long time, for months, it was Milton who was being killed every day and not Russell.
Yeah. She reveals, she's like, oh, Milton, The reason he knew your recipe and how to do everything is because we got into this time loop, and then we would just sit there watching you cook meth, figured out how to do everything, and figured that as soon as we figured our way out of it, we could make the meth ourselves. But I chose you instead of Russell because you're smart and Russell's an idiot, and I figured you might be able to find a way out.
Right. So that happens at some point. They reveal they've killed like 30 Milos, or Miltons. Yeah. So he just tells her because he doesn't have the balls to kill her. So he's like, well, I can kill Russell every day, like punching a clock, but I can't kill you. But please also don't kill me.
Yeah.
Like his speech he gives is like, I don't really look forward to you killing me, but I feel like it's basically inevitable because I won't kill you.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, no, I won't kill you. And then she immediately tries to kill him.
Yeah. And he goes and he's like, oh, hold on. You know, let me get some stuff and then we'll leave. And it's him going into the bathroom and recording everything.
Yeah, he steals the... At this point, they both start setting their traps in motion so they can kill each other and get out of this thing. And his is, I don't want to kill her, but I'm pretty sure she's going to try to betray me. So he rips the camera and log thing out of the police car, uses it to record a message for himself, hides it in a bathtub, and then doesn't kill Russell.
Although I'm still not sure how the whole... like recording something on that police thing works.
I'm sure it doesn't. I'm pretty sure police camera that the police dispatch thing that they have on police cars can't be used to record video messages in bathrooms.
Yeah. Also, when you rip it out from a car and there's like wires dangling, I'm like, what the fuck did you plug that into to then make it work?
I don't know. He's basically Gadget from the Rescue Rangers. He can just make. He's got super nerd powers.
Yeah, he's smart, which means he's smart for everything. He's a chemist and an electrical engineer and anything you need him to
he's
be.
He's just any old kind of smart, so don't worry about that. So he records the message for himself, and he doesn't kill Russell like he said he would.
Yeah.
He goes outside, knocks Russell unconscious, and ties him up.
Yeah, and then just shoots a bullet off into the air so it sounds like he kills him.
Yeah, and then she goes and retrieves that bullet from its convenient hiding spot.
From earlier in the film.
Yeah, and uses it to shoot him in the neck. And she's like, you knew I was going to do this. And he was like, well, I wasn't sure. And then, sure enough, he resets. She does not. She tries to escape. And he watches the video about himself in the bathtub and gets ready to go outside and kill her.
Well, yeah. The whole thing is, it resets the next day. They both wake up where they were on that day.
Yeah, because Russell was still alive. So there was at least one person still alive besides her.
Yeah. So because there was more than one person alive, they reset again. He goes to throw up, but now he's lost his memory.
He's lost his memory. He watches the video, which explains everything, but he's left out a crucial flaw. By leaving Russell tied up outside, Russell's also aware of the time loop this morning. So he immediately walks in and is like, hey guys, I watched the same video you did, and I'm really mad at you, so I'm going to tie you up in the garage and kill you both.
Yeah.
And, you know, that would have made an okay ending for the movie, but what happens is he goes outside, he immediately starts in with his Russian roulette bullshit again.
Oh my god, let me tell you something. When they sit down at the table in that basement, and he's like, let's handcuff ourselves, everyone to each other, so we're all handcuffed together, and then I'm going to put a bullet in here, and we're going to go around, and we're just going to play Russian roulette, because bullets don't lie. And my immediate thought was, okay, but... the second anyone that isn't you, Russell, gets that gun, they can just point it at you and click, and even if there's not one currently in the chamber, they can just keep pulling the trigger until it does shoot you.
Right. But thankfully, he does what I predicted would happen, which is agree magnanimously to go first and immediately kill himself.
Yeah, which is the other thing, is I'm like, man, your plan is stupid, because if you kill yourself, they're not going to keep doing this.
Yeah, that was the thing I kept thinking, was he was like, even if it's me, one of you guys has to also kill yourself, okay? Pinky swear.
Come on, you guys. Ugh.
So, basically, he says he'll go first, after pointing out rightly that the only one of them who has never died is Skylar.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, it's really your turn to die, if you think about it. I mean, you've never had to die. I've had to die, like, 1,800 times. But you've never died. This seems unfair. Anyway, I'll go first. Kapow, dead. And then Skylar and Milton have a terrible conversation that sucks, and Milton kills himself.
Yep, he's like, he manages to get a hold of a shotgun and point it at her, and he's like, look, whatever you do, I don't care, but I can't make this decision, and have a good life. And he just blows his head off.
Yeah, and then we get our big fucking Twilight Zone ending, where... she falls asleep because she's so stressed out over all the shit that happens. And when she wakes up, wouldn't you know it, it's the evil drug dealer and his evil girlfriend.
Yep, it is the next day, though. It didn't reset.
Oh, yeah, it finally goes to Wednesday.
It's no longer Tuesday. It's now Wednesday.
Yeah, and he shows up, and he's like, wow, you're handcuffed to a bunch of cut-off hands, and you're real beat up. You're crazy. Anyway, let's get you killed. And she's like, haha, that's great, because if you kill me, then we'll go into the stupid loop again.
Well, yeah, she just starts laughing hysterically.
Yeah.
But even then, I go, you know, technically, it should be if you spill blood under the full moon, and, I mean, I don't think it's still the full moon at this point.
It's at least tomorrow. It should be the day after the full moon. I don't know how long the full moon counts.
Well, the thing is, it was the full moon the day before the reset, because they were out doing the peyote smoking thing during the full moon.
Yeah.
And then the next day is when Milton would have originally been killed.
Well, maybe they're operating under the same rules as that other movie we watched, the Dragon Fieri, where there's a full moon like every 20 minutes.
Yeah, it's just always full moons. It's full moons all the way down. It's just eclipses all the time.
It's just like a garage door opener. It's just every 20 minutes, there's another full moon, no problem.
Don't worry about it, it's fine.
Big red crackly moon every 20 minutes. No one ever talks about it, though.
Strange.
Yeah. So, anyway, that's the ending, is that they're supposed to set the loop up again. But realistically, it won't work that way. Because the two of them start their day, Nabiki and Archer start their day miles away at an airport, and they don't know about the loop. So when they kill her, they're going to wake up miles away at an airport and have to want to drive back up there again every time. So the new loop isn't quite as convenient, because they don't all wake up in the same cabin.
Yeah.
So I feel like it won't last as long, but who knows? Yeah. Because we don't get to see it. The movie's over.
Well, no, you'll have one day, essentially, where if the following day, where, like, Archer and Nabiki think it's Thursday or whatever, they're like, oh, shit, the money's gone and the meth is gone, and they don't realize it's been a different day.
They're probably going to kill each other. That's the thing. They're going to wake up and the money and meth are gone, and they're going to blame each other for it.
That, or they blame someone in the crew, or something else happens. But then my question is, okay, they're down at the airport. If they kill someone in the crew, is now the crew member part of this
loop? I don't know. I think it has to happen in or near the cabin.
I guess, but they say that the, like, the Native American territory that this was like this giant swath, enough that they could not drive in a 24-hour period. They could not drive far enough to get out of the loop.
Yeah, and their idea for how to fix this magic curse they were under was like, driving's not good enough, let's try flying.
Yeah, and I'm like, okay, if it's a large enough territory that you couldn't drive out of it, then, you know, I just don't understand what you're going for here.
Yeah, I don't know. I couldn't tell you. Anyway, that's the end of the movie, and
man, there's no consistency in this.
No, I really want to stress how much I hate the slow scenes in this movie.
Well, let's go into the best and worst then.
Yeah, sure. It's going to be a fairly short episode because it was just not all that much of a movie. But yeah, okay. Best and worst.
Give me your best.
Like I was saying, at first, I think the director of this movie had some great, like, the people who behind this movie had some great ideas.
Uh-huh.
Murder Groundhog Day is a really interesting premise. They followed the rules fairly well, and especially at the end, fairly well. Not amazingly, but fairly well. At the end, Milton's plan is clever, and it's a really cool reveal when he's like, oh, well, I knew you'd betray me, so I set up all these contingency plans that'll work even if I lose my memory.
Yeah.
And I thought that was fairly clever. I like that a lot. Plus, I like that actor, Milton.
Oh, yeah.
Again, the star of Dithgism. he's a charming, interesting actor, and I hope he goes far.
Yeah.
And Deathgasm is definitely worth seeing.
Yeah, instead of this, go watch Deathgasm.
Yeah, Deathgasm's awesome. So definitely watch that instead of this. But like I said, the director, I feel like, had some competent moments. There were some very clever twists, and I'd say that's probably my favorite thing, is there were some good ideas.
Yeah.
What about you?
I mean, I said it at the start, the same thing as you. I think the premise of this was really good and wasted on this movie being pretty bad.
Yeah.
But I'll say this for it. Your main two guy actors, Russell and Milton.
Yeah.
They were both really good. Milton does a great job of being that sort of weird, you can believe he's kind of strung out and crazy nerd.
And there's some sequences with him that I like. Like, right away, like after one day, he gets over the whole I don't want to kill people thing.
Oh, yeah. As soon as he realizes, like, oh, I'm in a loop. And they're like, oh, but, like, Russell starts going, "You don't have it in you. You don't have the balls to kill me." And he just like picks up a gun and casually shoots him. He's like, "I don't give a fuck, man."
Yeah. Killing you doesn't even count.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And so the fact that he acclimates to that instantly. And again, Russell, he plays the part of the sort of like super crazy jock boyfriend thing. I'm like, he does a really good job.
Yeah, he does. He does a great job. His character doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but he does a great job playing it.
Yeah, I would say those two, great job in this movie. Same thing that you said for the best, but I'll also throw in them as being really good in this.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, worst thing in this movie...
Well, it's going to be the acting performance of the Olivia, whatever, of Skylar. I mean, she plays her character as flat and smug and kind of perpetually bored, but also ludicrously competent, which the two don't match, because take some agency. All she does halfway through the movie is switch which boyfriend she's relying on to solve the problem for her.
Yeah, which also takes away that whole... I mean, normally when you'd think about it, you're like, oh, yeah, well, you know, she might be hyper-competent, but she's in an abusive relationship, so, you know, she doesn't have the, like, mental fortitude to be able to go against his wishes because he's battered her down or whatever. But then... in the movie, she just sort of goes, oh, I decided that you're smarter than him, so now I'm with you. And you're like, okay, so it's not that you couldn't decide to go against Russell. It's just you hadn't until this point?
It's just that you didn't feel like it. The whole thing where her whole arc in this movie is switching boyfriends because she thinks the other boyfriend will get her out of a situation more efficiently is kind of a disappointingly, like...
Oh, yeah, she doesn't have an arc. Like, Milton sort of does.
Well, he eventually kills himself to get out of the loop, and that's to him, I think that's the best he can think to do. He's like, I'm fucking sick of this.
Well, I mean, you get this, the arc for him, at least, you can see for him, and it's why I really liked him in this movie, is the more loops they go through,
mm-hmm.
the more he starts to just look kind of haggard about the whole thing.
Yeah.
And it seems to take a toll on him, whereas, again... fucking Skylar's just like, oh, here we go. I've been living this day for 5 years, and it doesn't matter to me. I don't give a fuck about anything. I'm going to light a cigarette.
I'm still just acting like Uma Thurman in Kill Bill. Oh, not Kill Bill. In Uma Thurman in Pulp Fiction. Just too cool for the room every day.
Yeah, it's just infuriating.
The whole cigarette lighting thing was what I was going to put as my least favorite thing, like straight up. Is there are, and it's not just because it's the same day over and over again, because it's not usually repeated shots, but... her characterization is basically person who can light matches with her thumb.
Great.
And so we get to watch her do that so goddamn many times. and it's just infuriating. And it, like I said, there's just no characterization for her. The whole... I know I'm harping on it, but the thing that her arc, her dramatic arc is, I feel like this man is more competent than this man when it comes to solving my problems for me, is a real disappointing message to come out of a horror movie that we were surprised to learn had a female director.
Yeah. And I mean, for me... the worst thing on my end is I'm going to go with the inconsistencies in the world.
Yeah.
I am 100% always on board with a movie that wants to have a stupid thing.
A time loop sort of situation.
Not even just a time loop. If you want to say magic exists in your world, if you want to say there's, you know, robots, or you want to say there's anything sci-fi or fantasy.
Well, what was that movie we watched for Horrortoberfest last year that was the...
The House at the End of Time?
The House at the End of Time was a sort of movie that has a weird gimmick that earns it at the end.
Yes.
Everything comes together, everything makes sense at the end. This movie doesn't do that. You're left with a million questions.
Well, the big thing with Groundhog Day is it has rules and sticks with those rules the entire time.
Yes.
Whereas this seems to have some rules and occasionally doesn't care about them and sometimes does, and never certain what's actually going on with the rules.
It would be sort of, this movie would almost be more interesting if they were also running out of food, or if every day they almost starved to death. Like after they finished eating all the eggs in the fridge, they were like, well, you won't die in 24 hours from starvation, so every day we wake up and almost and get real hungry and grumpy, and that happens every day.
Every day we just get real grumpy about it.
Yeah, it's just all they get stuck in the future of Chrono Trigger.
Yeah, we've got a water faucet, so it's fine. We can drink. Yeah. We just don't have anything to eat anymore.
Oh, you rested in the Enertron, but you're still hungry.
Yeah, the fact that there's like 5 years worth of dead bodies there, and you never see them.
Yeah, there should be a mountain of Russells outside.
Yeah,
no. And again, their food resets every day, but nothing else they have does.
No, it's the inconsistencies in your world annoy me more than basically anything else.
Yeah.
If you've got a premise, regardless of how stupid it happens to be, as long as you are internally consistent for it, I'm on board, sure.
This is the kind of movie where you know that people are going to ask the director about that and be like, hey, do they actually run out of grenades, or do those just reset automatically as well? And her answer is going to be something like, the movie's really more about the human condition.
Don't worry about that. I'm like, no, I worry about that.
Internal consistency is the hallmark of a poor director. They're just going to give the same answers that you got from, like, the guys who made Lost. You know, fucking Lindelof and Cuse, and they'd be like, it's not really about making sense. It's more about, will Jack get back together with Kate?
Ugh, I don't care about that. No one cares about that.
So, at least this movie doesn't have the idiot plot problem. Like,
no.
The two characters, the two mains, at least, like, right away go like, all right, we're going to start trying to solve this problem, and there will never be a conversation that we should have, but don't.
Yeah. It's just really bad world building, essentially, for me.
But that's all. That's fair. What are we going to do now? What do we do now, John? I forget what happened.
We're
going to
rate it.
We're going to rate. Oh, God. We're going to rate it?
Yeah, we're going to rate it. 1 to 5, each of us gives us the rating out of 10. Jeff, your rating.
I'm a sucker for time travel movies. I'll throw this thing a 2.5.
Okay. That seems fair.
Yeah. I mean, it's rare to see a time loop or time travel movie that's actually consistent and good. There's one or two.
Yeah.
I mean, the only one that actually is trackable that I'm even aware of is Primer. And Primer is also, it's too convoluted.
I was going to say, Primer's not trackable.
No, it makes sense. It's internally consistent, and you can write out how everything happens. But it takes a fucking calculus student to write it out.
Oh, yeah.
It's ultra complicated. It does hang together. It's not necessarily worth it.
No, but I mean, if I'm looking at something like Back to the Future, it is internally consistent with the rules they put.
That is true.
So yeah. I'm fine if they aren't like, well, that's not the way time travel would work. I'm like, time travel doesn't work. Fuck you. If they say this is the way time travel works and they always make it work that way, fine. I don't give a shit.
I'll tell you the one that's the most internally consistent out of all the time travel movies, of course, is Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Which is, of course, Austin Powers 2?
I think it's Encino Man, in which Brendan
Fraser
travels through time to his perspective.
Travels far into the future.
I'm sorry, wait, hang on. I'm thinking of the wrong Brendan Fraser movie. I meant to say the one where he lives in a bomb shelter for most of his life.
Oh, yes, George of the Jungle.
Yeah, George of the Jungle, of course.
Obviously.
Primarily in a bomb shelter. I'm sorry, I meant the one where Christopher Walken is his dad.
Oh, yes, Monkey Bone.
Yeah, Monkey Bone, exactly. That's
obviously.
That's the one I was talking about. The one where he falls in love with a young ingenue with black hair. I think it's The Mummy. Oh, wait, that does happen in The Mummy.
Oh, wait, hold on.
Shit. Fucking damn. Racial vice, I forgot.
Damn!
I broke it, John. I broke the internal consistency. So I'm giving you a 2.5.
2.5.
What about you, man?
You know, I'm gonna give it a 2. It was the premise is enough to make it so that it doesn't go lower.
Mm-hmm.
Like, basically, it's getting 2 points just on the premise.
Yeah.
And a little bit of decent acting from two of the guys.
Yeah.
But for most of it, I was just like, this is fucking boring. And for a movie about, like, murder Groundhog Day, this shouldn't be boring.
Yeah. Well, they intentionally, almost feels like they intentionally made the murders boring. Because Russell getting killed is almost invariably either off screen or so fast that it doesn't matter.
And, like, outside of the first one or two, it doesn't matter. Like, they aren't even going to show him anymore.
Yeah, 3/4 of the Russell kills are gunshots off screen.
Yeah, they're just like, oh, did you kill Russell? Yeah, he's dead. Like, yeah. Okay, great.
The only one kill that's got any kind of visual interest to it is the one where they shoot him from beneath the floorboards and then have sex in a shower of his blood.
Yep.
Which,
and I mean, you hear that and you go, man, this movie sounds great. And you go, no, because even that's kind of boring.
Oh, it's super boring. I mean, not that I'm a super sucker for looking at flesh, but they have a lot of all your clothes on type sex.
Yeah, they do.
So, and it's not like I need to see some hot naked people. It's just that all your clothes on type sex it takes me out of the movie because it looks stupid. Artfully cover up the nips and try this. Come on, let's
get yourselves one of them movie blankets.
Yeah.
Them L blankets. So yeah, 4.5 out of 10 for Blood Punch. Thank you again to Jacob S. for mailing that to us.
Yeah, if you ever want to get 2 shots on the list of 170 movies we're supposed to watch.
Hey man, that's the only reason this got picked is because it was the second one of the 2 entries.
That is
true. So there you go.
If you ever want to double your chances,
double
could be
your fun.
by mailing us a DVD instead of just recommending one. That's the trick. And you can get the address for where to mail them by emailing us and asking for it.
And you can email us at systemmastery@gmail.com.
You sure can. You can also leave your movie recommendations, the regular kind, at r/systemmastery on Reddit, on the big movie list that's there. That's the place where we use that spot to roll the movies up randomly, and it's the best way to get them up onto the list correctly.
Yep, it'll get you up on there.
And again, thanks to the r/systemmastery fans who are maintaining that list for us there. You guys are invaluable. We definitely were not doing this.
We are awful at our hobby.
We have three other shows.
we are swamped, and you have decided to make our lives ever so slightly easier.
It's so good.
And for that, thank you.
So, as always, thanks so much to them.
Thank you for listening. If you want to support us, you can, of course, give us a little something on Patreon. So look us up, System Mastery on Patreon. And if you listen to our System Mastery podcast, you get some bonus content for that. And, of course, we also have The Afterthought, which is just a companion piece to the System Mastery, but we also do some listener mail, so you can email us questions if you want to ask us anything.
Yeah, you know, we don't get that many questions about Movie Mastery. I don't think we've ever really gotten any questions about films.
Yeah, give us some film questions. I love film questions. Some films.
Is this an episode of I Love Film Questions?
I Hate Film Questions.
Oh, this is an episode of I Hate Film Questions. Okay.
Go ahead, do that. Find us on the Twitter or Facebook, whatever. But we will be back in a couple of weeks with another Movie Mastery. But until then, have a good one.